Lesson 7, the Greek sentence, vocabulary list, paragraph 7.1. This vocabulary list has mainly nouns, verbs, and adjectives. There are some prepositions at the bottom that we'll discuss when we get to them. I'll read the words in the left-hand column as they should be memorized, starting with the word for sinful. Hamartolos, hamartule, hamartolon. Apostello, balo, baptizo, hierisco, notice the rough breathing, he zoe, ha theos, judaios, judaia, judaion, kephale, he kephale, ha cosmos, krino, ha laos, ha lithos. Second column, mellow, minnow, hados, hey hados. Unusual word, it is a feminine noun, but it looks like it's masculine, has a rough breathing. Ha uranos, pollen, presbuteros, presbutera, presbuteron. An adjective, masculine, feminine, and neuter. I gathered together soon, ago. Child ta technon. Technia, when you put an ia ending on a noun, it often makes it into a diminutive, in this case, little children. Ha tapas, Cairo, ha Christos. The vocabulary words then are primarily nouns, verbs, and adjectives, but at the bottom we have four prepositions. Prepositions in Greek do multiple duties, and we'll be studying these in detail later on, but for translation purposes now, we introduce these four. In the left-hand column, apa, meaning from, meta, with or after, and in the right-hand column, kata, down, upon, against, along, according to. Yes, it can be used all of those ways and some more yet. Pros, to, toward, with, or at. Again, it can be used all of those ways and a few more besides. Parts of a sentence. This is something that most of us learned years ago when we were in junior high or even elementary school, at least when schools were teaching such things. I learned them starting in the fifth and sixth grade. We already discussed these in lesson two, at least we listed them. They're called basal parts because it's a convenient way to distinguish them from the other parts of the sentence. Clauses. A clause is any set of words that contains at least one subject and one predicate. It may also contain one or more of the other basal parts, like prepositional phrases and infinitives and all kinds of things. However, it must have at least a subject and a predicate to be considered a clause. So every sentence is a clause, has at least one clause, and that clause is called the main clause. Every sentence has to have one main clause at least. That is then called an independent clause because it can stand alone as a sentence by itself. If a sentence has only one main clause, it's a simple sentence. It can have more than one main clause, however, in which case the sentence is considered a compound sentence. Usually, compound main clauses are connected to one another by a coordinate conjunction, such as and, or but. Those conjunctions can also connect simply words or phrases or whatever, but they can connect clauses in a compound sentence. The subordinate clause. A subordinate clause is sometimes called a dependent clause because it cannot stand alone as a simple sentence and must have a main or independent clause to which it is related. Often a subordinate clause will be connected to the main clause by a subordinate conjunction, such as after, when, while, if, that, etc. There's quite a number of them. Some subordinate clauses contain a relative pronoun, such as who, whom, which, or what, rather than a subordinate conjunction. So those are the two kinds of clauses that you have. You have those that are associated with subordinate conjunctions and those that are associated with relative pronouns. Paragraph 7.3, accidents and syntax. Accidents. Traditionally, first-year grammars spend most of their time studying accidents. Accidents has to do with the way the words of the language look, that is, their form. As we have seen, words in Greek language, in the Greek language, change their spelling according to their function in the in their sentence or clause. Now, I must say something then here about accidents. There are different elements to accidents, the most common of which in Greek are the changing of endings. But there are other ways to change the forms of nouns and verbs. The accidents does not determine the function of the noun or the verb in the clause, but it helps determine it. So we must study them carefully. The function of a verb or a noun in a clause is determined by context. Even if the form of the verb particularly, as an element of accidents, causes us to think that that verb may be, for instance, passive rather than active. It may very well be. Certain forms of the verb are often passive, but they don't have to be. And that form is incorrectly called a passive form. The form can be something other than passive. And once you realize that forms do not determine function, it's a lot more relevant it's a lot easier, I should say, to understand why things change the way they do in the Greek language. So, both nouns and verbs add endings. They're called suffixes. But verbs, particularly, can add a prefix or an infix. A prefix is a letter or letters added to the beginning of a word, while an infix is a letter or letters added in the middle of a word. Very simple. One other thing I should mention here. Nouns and even adjectives can also have prefix prepositions added, just like a verb can. In Greek, this is not uncommon. And so we have to be very careful that we don't overstate the fact that a prefix preposition can occur at the beginning of a noun or a pronoun as well as a verb. That changes the meaning of the word, but not necessarily the meaning to the meaning of the preposition itself that's attached to the beginning of the word. So that kind of a prefix really does affect the meaning of the word, but it does it in an unusual way, perhaps. Those kinds of prefixed prepositions are called perfective by grammarians, meaning they perfect the meaning of the word, the noun particularly, or could be a verb or an adverb or an adjective, rather. Syntax is the second great section of grammatical study, the first being accidents. You spend most of your time in first year learning forms. That's just inevitable. You have to be familiar with the forms. But syntax is really the more important of the studies, even though it's often rarely discussed in first year Greek, but we have to discuss it to be fair with the text of the scriptures. So I mentioned here in this first little paragraph, most of the first year Greek is taken up studying accidents, spelling, which is called orthography by grammarians, that kind of thing. It's very important. In the second sentence in that first paragraph, when we look at the parts of a sentence, we may start by looking at the suffixes, etc., but we are actually studying syntax when we consider the subject, the predicate, the direct object, phrases, independent clause, dependent and independent clauses, all that stuff. That has to do with syntax. Here again, I'm going to mention this, and I'm going to mention it repeatedly through this course. The syntax of a sentence is determined not simply by inflections, prefixes, suffixes, etc., but by the relationship between the words and clauses, which is primarily determined by studying context. In English, the only way to discover syntax is by contextual study. But in Greek, the inflectional system helps us quite a bit in syntactical study. However, while helpful, the inflectional changes are not enough, because those changes do not determine the syntactical relationships. We must learn to examine the syntax through observation of usage, just like in English, actually, not simply by observation of prefixes, suffixes, and infixes. To help the student develop his study of syntax, this first-year Greek program provides a system of diagramming. And below I have a discussion of diagramming as a syntactical device. By the end of the year, a complete system of diagramming forms will be available. The advanced student should spend as much time as he can practicing diagramming. And I cannot overemphasize this. When you're studying first-year Greek, most of your time is going to be taken up with learning endings and prefixes and suffixes and grammatical force and so on. But syntax is really important, and do as much diagramming as you can. In the first-year course, I don't require a person to do a lot of diagramming. I recommend it, and you've already noticed that in the exercises at the end of each lesson, where we have sentences to be translated, I recommend certain sentences to be diagrammed. Translation from Greek to English. The student is not required to do a formal translation for this course, but, as noted, a word-for-word literal translation is required in order to do the translation exercises. The student may smooth out the translation just enough to be able to follow it in English custom of word order, using English custom of word order. And then I'm going to really not read all of this. This is a statement starting in section 7.4, syntactical study as a step in the interpretive process. I'm going to let you as the student read this. I recommend reading it out loud and discussing it with other students. Basically, what I've done here is I've written a little essay, just a few paragraphs, on my philosophy of diagramming and why I teach it and why I think it's important. So you can read that, and it gives you a little of my background and why I emphasize diagramming. The next section, the diagramming methodology, section 7.4, is where I give you some technical data. I've already mentioned some of this, I think, in previous lessons. All technical fields maintain a specialized vocabulary. Now, this is true in any technical field. So people who are in the field can communicate in certain words, phrases, clauses, and so on and so forth, take upon specialized meaning that may be misunderstood by people who are studying some other field that uses similar wording. But in Greek we have, and in language in general, we have certain concepts, and we've already learned some of them, such as predicate and direct object and all that stuff. And all of those are specialized vocabulary for language. By the way, a specialized vocabulary is called jargon. If you want to know the technical name for it, jargon is that which is specialized for a particular field of study. The first thing that we already have learned is the basal line. That's a straight horizontal line. Every main clause and every dependent clause starts with the basal line, because you have to have a subject and a predicate, and that brings us to the next statement, the predicate line, which distinguishes between the subject and the predicate. I've given you an example here, logos ein. This is taken directly from John 1:1. Word was, actually says, in the beginning was the word, but it says the word was, or word was, it's actually an anarthrous. The predicate line distinguishes between the subject and the predicate. We call it a predicate line for convenience sake. There's an object line. An object line is a straight line that just touches the basal line, or it could be the object of a preposition, because it can be on a modifying line for a prepositional phrase. A vertical line does not intersect. It stops at the basal line. I've given you an example from John 1:12, as many as received him. Hosoi technically is a relative pronoun, so this is not a main clause, but it is an example of a relative clause where the relative pronoun is in the nominative. It's even in form one, which is very helpful. Usually, subjects of sentences will be in form one. Not always, however, and I will warn you about that later on. Subjects of clauses are almost always, however, in the nominative form, form one. And then you have the direct object is often, almost always in the accusative, but you can have objects in any oblique form. Dative locative instrumental, the third form, genitive ablative, the second form, or the accusative, the fourth form. So you can't say that direct objects are only in one form. Normally, however, the most common form is the accusative form, that is the form that we have here, auton. The complement line is another line that's like the object line, but it occurs only with state of being verbs, where they have a complement that follows the state of being verb. We have here in John 1:1, logos ein theos, word was God. The complement is God, state of being verb was, theos refers back to logos, therefore we have a slanted line, that's the complement line, pointing back to the subject to indicate that we're not dealing with a direct object, but with a complement. Notice that the complement will also be in form one, just like the subject. Logos is not a nominative, theos is nominative. That's the nature of complements. State of being verbs are linking verbs between two words of grammatical equal weight, in this case both nominatives. Once in a while there's a variation on that, but nevertheless that is the normal function. Form one is the form that you look for there. Now modifying lines. A lot of different diagramming systems use different ways of diagramming modifying words. And one of the things that I rebelled against when I was a student was the slanted modifying line. If you've ever done any diagramming, you know that for some reason grammarians love slanted lines. I just have a very difficult time with that. You have to turn your paper sideways to write on those silly slanted lines. This system of drawing, having a single modifying line coming down for all the words that modify either a noun or a verb or anything, is not my invention. It was something that was invented by somebody else. When I was in high school, in elementary school, in junior high school, we used those slanted lines. And I just wondered if there wasn't something better even then. But when I got into college, I found this system that was developed by, it was actually used in some English books that were used in one of the colleges that I attended. I didn't take that English course, but I had people coming to me to help their diagramming, and so I helped them out, and I learned this form of diagramming. And then when I went to seminary in San Francisco, they also used this similar kind of diagramming form, so I've adopted this for my own. So the modifying line comes straight down from whatever noun or verb the words associated with it are modifying, changing, identifying, describing, whatever they're doing, and then they come out to the right immediately, and that's the modifying line. I've got two of them there. You can stack modifiers, as in the phrase, every good tree, pon is every, agathon is good, dendron is tree, or a single modifying line makes or produces karpos kalus, good fruit. kalus is good, karpus is fruit. That's the plural form of karpos, by the way. Particle line. A particle line, it's on the next page, page 43, extends below the baseline as though it were a modifying line. It looks like a modifying line, except, and go to page 43, the particle line extends to the left instead of to the right. Whenever we have a subordinate clause that is introduced by a subordinate conjunction, and we have a lot of them in the New Testament, we diagram it like this one. In this case, the word aeon, if, is diagrammed underneath the subject, but it is not modifying the subject. It is actually introducing the entire clause as a subordinate if clause, we call it, if we should confess. This is taken from 1 John 1:9. If we should confess the sins of us, our sins. Notice again, there is a modifying line under sins that is a direct the direct object. Hamartios is the fourth form of the feminine noun in this particular case. So if we should confess our sins. The particle line then extends to the left. A tree is, as it is shown here, we'll be using a lot of trees. We use a lot of trees in diagramming because it's a device that is used to identify and view compound structures. In this course, primarily we will be limiting ourselves to compound subjects, objects, objects of the prepositions, and so on and so forth. And we will usually have just two or three. Here, most of them will be two in these early courses, or early lessons. In this particular instance, the tree is in the sentence from 1 John 1:9. He is faithful and righteous. It says just, I think, in the King James Version. He is the subject. It's in the ending of the verb. Esten is a third person singular. He is righteous, pistos, faithful, pistos, and righteous, dikaios. He is both at the same time, and therefore they're coordinated by chi. The next one is also a taken from 1 John 1:9. It's a little more complicated. I've added some things. I start off with here both, there's two clauses, just to introduce the concept of a couple of clauses with you, to you. The clause, the main clause is, he is faithful and righteous. But the subordinate clause is, if we confess our the sins of us. That's the subordinate clause to the main clause. We diagram subordinate clauses that are if clauses underneath the verb. This is an example. It's really only part of the sentence, and the entire sentence is a bit more complicated. It has more to it than this, but I give you this for your observation. Diagramming prepositional phrases, paragraph 7.5. These are modified, prepositional phrases are modifiers, like adjectives or adverbs. It consists of two parts, the preposition and the object or objects of the preposition. You're going to have compound objects. The objects of a preposition will always be either a noun or a substantive adjective, or in some cases, an infinitive even. Also, the object of the preposition will regularly have an adjective or adjectives modifying it. So, the object of the preposition is a noun or a substantive of some kind. Nouns are substantives, but adjectives can be used as nouns and therefore are substantival adjectives, for instance, and other things. Note the following examples, and I've given you more than one here. The first one is hoi mathetai menusis, menusin in to cosmo. The disciples remain, or it could be translated, are remaining or are abiding in the world. The prepositional phrase in the world tells where the disciples remain. Therefore, it is an adverb modifying the verb remain. And so I've diagrammed it on a modifying line, but not as an adjective now, but as a prepositional phrase that is adjectival. Adverbial, because it goes back to the verb, not adjectival. Hoi mathetai, the disciples, abide or remain in to cosmo, in the world. The next one is a little bit different, but it's also an adverbial one. Adverbial prepositional phrases are much more common than adjectival ones in Greek. It's not to say that adjectival ones don't occur, because they do, and they occur somewhat regularly, not too often, but they do occur from time to time. But adverbial ones are much more common, and that's why we're emphasizing that here. Here the sentence is, ha theos pimpai tus angelus eis ton kosmon. God is sending the messengers, notice it's plural, angelus, into the world. I translated that messengers because that's the basic meaning of that word. Angelus does not mean primarily angels. That was a secondary use of the word where it became a technical use for a category of spirit beings. But the primary meaning of that word is angelos, or in this case it's the accusative form angelus, the primary meaning of that is messenger or messengers. The prepositional phrase, again, tells where God is sending the messengers. Notice, God is sending the messengers into the world. So it's telling where he's sending them. So those are examples of prepositional phrases that are adverbial. I've used verbs with direct objects. Several times you will run across verbs that have no direct object. Those verbs are considered intransitive complete. If they have a subject complement, they're intransitive copulative. They're intransitive because they do not transfer action from the subject to an object or from an agent back upon the subject, in which case the verb is considered a passive voice verb. If it has an object, if the verb has a direct object, it is transitive active. The voice is active. If it has no direct object, but the subject is receiving the action of the verb, then it is a transitive passive. There's still a transference of action. And there's either a agent stated or implied with the passive voice verb. If it's not stated, it's still implied. You have to have somebody doing the action for there to be a transference of action. 7.6 exercises. These are the diagramming, translation and diagramming exercises for this lesson. Enjoy your study of Greek.